Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is... Whoa, that's too loud. This time it's going to be just right, baby. Don't worry, we got that perfect porridge now. I'm a little quiet. Are you too loud? Now we got that perfect porridge. Let me dip my finger in it. Ooh, that's nice. We're ready now. I'm a little hot. No, we're good now.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hey, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Could you just point the mic just a little bit further down? So it's more, now it's more of a physical, let me see. Oh, that looks great. Yeah, so this is wonderful. In this podcast, we talk about things that we are really into right now, like contained plosives and gain balance and...
perfect porridge.
Perfect porridge and all that good stuff. Listen, we're rounding 100.
Yeah.
And we need to talk about what we're going to do off camera, because I don't have any fucking idea.
I think we did actually talk about something.
Did we? Yeah. Oh, shoot. How quickly we forget, huh?
Well, I remembered.
Well, how quickly we both forget an equal amount. But anyway, you can't come into 100 sounding like complete shit. You know, There's just no excuse for it, people. Mm-hmm. Invest in some acoustics treatment, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many 100-episode-old podcasts I listen to that still sound like the butt cheeks. So I want us to sound like some real professional shit, some real Ira Glass shit.
What's the opposite of the butt cheeks?
Well, you got to understand, the butt cheeks can be good or bad. It depends on how you use it and sort of like your cadence, like, oh God, this audio is just, it's the butt cheeks. Mm-hmm. Or if you're talking about a song, you're like, oh, this song is the butt cheeks. Mm-hmm.
Is this the new slap?
I think so. I feel like I used to say that's the butt cheeks.
Oh, yeah.
For a brief period of my life. And I can't remember if it was the period where I was doing recorded audio entertainment for the masses or not, but I would like to bring it back. That's the butt cheeks, man.
I like it.
Yeah. Do you have any small wonders?
I do.
What is it?
So I was looking today and I saw that they posted some concert footage from Lollapalooza 2019.
Yes.
In the great city of Chicago.
Hell yeah.
I used to volunteer to be a volunteer at that festival.
Not, you didn't volunteer to perform? Don't worry, guys. No. I got this.
No. It was like 2005 to maybe 2008. I used to volunteer. Anyway, I have a real soft spot for Lollapalooza.
Lollapalooza is fun. Is that what they called it for you?
Well, no, that's the volleyball festival they have every year. And I saw an incredible concert video of Death Cab and Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
Performing Do You Remember? And it was very, very good. Chance the Rapper is maybe one of the best live shows, I would say, in the nation right now.
Have you seen him before?
I got to see him at ACL Fest.
Oh, that's right.
And he just puts on such a good live show. He just brings such like energy and enthusiasm to everything he does. And to see him like in his home city of Chicago.
In front of a huge ass crowd.
Yeah. It was incredible.
So good. I want to talk about, for my small wonder, the chorus of You Are My Sunshine. It's a sweet song. I was going to bring it as a big wonder because I sing it to Henry like a few times every night. And it's sweet. Like I just like, you know, you're my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. That's sweet, right? And that's nice. And you sing it to your kiddo and it's sweet. And I was going to like talk about that. I was going to look into like the history of it and talk about it. And then I read the verses. Did you know about the verses?
There's more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like I knew that, but I don't remember anything about it.
The verses are so creepy. The verses are so creepy and bad and unhealthy. No,
I mean, the whole idea of please don't take my sunshine away kind of suggest a foreboding element.
Yeah. I'll just go through some of the highlights here. The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. But when I awoke, dear, I was mistaken and I hung my head and cried. So that didn't rhyme even a little bit, but that's fine. We can keep pushing through. Second verse. I'll always love you and make you happy if you will only say the same. But if you leave me to love another, you'll regret it all someday. Hey, You Are My Sunshine.
Oh, this is not a song for kids, huh?
No, it's kind of not. It's You Told Me Once, Dear, You Really Loved Me and No One Else Could Come Between, But Now You've Left Me and Love Another. You Have Shattered All My Dreams.
Whew.
Come here, son. It's time for our Betty Bye song.
I think this is maybe a song for a lover and not for a child.
It's a song for a lover in 1939 when you thought that this was an acceptable way to talk to your lover. When it still wasn't, but yeah. I actually had a good hearty laugh. Maybe that's the small wonder, is the big laugh I had while researching this, and then, you know, control A, deleting all of my notes about You Are My Sunshine. Who goes first this week? It's the Who Goes First This Week song.
When I think it's you.
Who goes first this week? It's me.
Yeah.
My first thing, like many subjects I've tried to tackle in the past, couldn't think of a good way to put it in words.
Mm-hmm.
But what I landed on is like shopping for and like picking your everyday loadout. Putting
what
together
do you mean by
your
loadout?
Everyday loadout. I'm sorry that I can't. Okay. To extrapolate, I think that back to school shopping is kind of like a great example of this, and the first like exposure you get to this idea.
Mm-hmm.
You're a kid or in high school or college or whatever, you go to the store, you got a budget. You want to find some cool bags with cool characters on them, maybe.
Yeah.
Depending on how old you are, maybe you do need a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one because that's what's cool and you want people to know that you know what is up. You want the hypest Trapper Keeper. And maybe when you get older, you're looking for maybe a more functional Trapper Keeper, but you still want it to look good, but it's like a different set of priorities. And all that back to school shopping stuff is like a different kind of shopping from like, I'm going to go buy myself, you know, some nice things that I'm excited for, because it's like an all day thing that is functional that people are going to see you with all the time.
Yes. Did you know I thought about doing back to school shopping as my topic?
Wow.
And I actually was curious to see what the back to school trends were for 2019.
Oh, well, let me Google that after I finish.
Okay.
That'll be a fun little miniature segment.
It's not really anything that you would hope it would be.
Oh, did you already Google it?
I did. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, then go ahead and tell me. Correspondent on the
field.
So
I ended up on like 17 magazine.
Ugh, they don't know. They're 17.
Yeah, and it was just kind of like, hey, wear this romper and maybe put a sweater over it in case it's cold.
Get the fuck out of here, 17.
Like, this isn't what I wanted. I wanted like real, like now fashion.
The real shit. I also wanted to know, like, is there going to be a seventh Paw Patrol member that they're debuting on a jacket or something? Anyway, I haven't gone back to school shopping for quite some time, but like to bring it forward into the adult age, I get this way with some stuff. The clothes are maybe like too broad of an example, right? Because fashion is like kind of its own thing. But like a jacket, I will research a jacket because a jacket, I want it to be suitable for like a few different kinds of weather, the kinds of weather that I am likely to be exposed to. I want it to have good pockets, the right number of pockets, functional pockets. I want it to have form and function.
You're saying this as if you have one jacket per year, and I know that.
That's not true. I have several jackets, but I don't want to just buy a fucking jacket willy-nilly. When we went to New Orleans to do our tour, it was about 30 degrees colder than I thought it was going to be, and I spent like half a day looking for a pea coat, just like a nice pea coat, because I know I look good in a pea coat, but I wanted one that doesn't look like and feel like and doesn't have pockets and feel like dog shit. So I spent some time on it. The biggest thing I got into was about last year I got real deep into shopping for backpacks, because I had that Swiss Gear backpack that everybody has and it fell apart. And I was like, let me look at some other shit.
You say everybody, but really it's just your two other brothers.
Me and my two brothers. No, it's like a bestseller on Amazon. That's why we decided to buy it.
Okay.
And so like I needed a backpack that, you know, had the correct container size. It had the correct number of gallons is how they measure that, right? And so like if it's too many gallons, it's not going to fit under a plane seat. And at that point, like, what the fuck am I even doing here? But I needed
measure backpacks in gallons?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Huh.
Unless I'm like wildly misremembering, which wouldn't be the first time that's happened on the podcast. But I needed to be able to fit like my backpack, a second backpack. I need to be able to fit my laptop and like my big headphones, and the Switch is like always like, and those three are always coming with
third
me.
Third backpack.
A third backpack goes in there. A stylus, maybe iPad, maybe pen, like some Sharpies.
This is why it's so hard to shop for you, Griffin, is that you have opinions about a lot of things.
Yeah. You do good, though. Like, you have never gotten me something that has,
I've never gotten
like,
you a bad item of clothing, I'll say.
You've never gotten me a bad item of clothing, no. And for, like, other things, like cooking implements, like, yeah, you crush it every time. And I feel like that's kind of, I don't know, that's not something I, that's not my everyday thing.
But I would never buy you a backpack, is what I'm saying.
Yo, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get it.
I know.
You wouldn't get it. It literally took me like 2 weeks to find the perfect backpack because they're expensive. Like, nice backpacks are expensive. But I got so fucking into it because I use it constantly, mm-hmm, and it's held up really nicely, and it, mm-hmm, is perfect for me. It's the perfect size. It can, like, everything fits so neatly inside this bag that when I zip it up, it's like not an inch of space. It's so, so nice, and I love it so much. And it's just like, that's part of my loadout. And the stuff that I keep in there is kind of too, like, I always take that Switch with me everywhere I go, whenever I travel, that laptop's always with me. There's this concept called everyday carry that is kind of like this.
Yes, yes.
I remember there was a phase where like a couple of my buddies back in Huntington were like doing this, where you just sort of lay out all the things that you carry with you and you take a nice picture of it. Like, what's the gear? Travis is more into this than I am, because Travis almost always has like a bottle opener. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you know, you got your phone, your wallet, you got your, you know, some folks like a watch, a pocket knife, like a craftsman,
a comb that looks like a switchblade,
a little comb switchblade, like whatever. I'm into it. I like that idea of just like, here's my,
your Tamagotchi.
Here's my inventory. And
your slap bracelet.
I don't have like, I don't know. I don't get excited to shop for, I get more excited to shop for stuff like this than I do for like frivolous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even leave the house all that often. So it's not like the biggest thing.
You're the same way about travel mugs.
You've
had many a travel mug since, yeah, I've known you.
It's mostly because I keep losing the dig dang things, or
mm-hmm, or you don't wash them, and
or I don't wash them, and I leave them in a backseat of a car for a month and a half, and I'm like, well, that one's just toast. That one's got amoebas in it. What's your first thing?
So my first thing is a nonfiction piece that was published in the Paris Review back in July, and it was called "The Crane Wife."
I saw this pop up like everywhere. Uh-huh. I feel like
it kind of blew up, yeah, a little bit. It was written by CJ Hauser. She is a professor in Colgate University of Creative Writing.
Well, and dentistry, right?
And dentistry.
They all have to also do. They do have to do some teeth stuff on the side.
So this piece got passed around a lot because it very precisely captures the experience of many women that date somebody who makes them feel just less than, I guess.
Right.
You know, just more insecure than they were when they started. Mm. So the piece begins in this really kind of compelling way. The first sentence is, 10 days after I called off my engagement, I was supposed to go on a scientific expedition to study the whooping crane on the Gulf Coast of Texas. So she has written a couple novels, and her second one is called Family of Origin, and it came out that same month in July, I think. And I haven't read this novel, but I'm assuming what she's referring to in her essay is studying for the novel that just came out.
Is it about cranes and stuff?
I think it's just about just the natural world, in many ways.
Cool. Like a zoo books. Nice, man. She wrote a zoo books. I love it.
Sometimes it's if you've been frozen for 20 years and then your frame of references are all based on.
I still get zoo books, dude. I still get zoo books. Check the mailbox. Oh, that's right. I sneak them in the house as soon as they get here and I hide them in my closet.
Under the mattress.
I don't want you taking my freaking zoo books. I don't want our kids slobbering and blobbering all over. I'm ruining my freaking zoo books. There's new zoo animals all the time, man.
So wait, are you saying that each issue has a new zoo animal, or that all the time new zoo animals come out?
New zoo animals popping out, man. Elephants too. The sequel to elephants.
Like koalas, you know, and alligators.
Super gators, man.
Just furry gators.
Yeah, they're big furry gators
climb that trees.
Have two torsos, two heads, no legs, no tails. So cool these guys are.
And so this story kind of goes back and forth between the end of her engagement and her previous relationship and then her experience studying, you know, the various, you know, pond life in Texas. You know, pond life.
Yeah, sure.
I shouldn't have to go into that. Everybody knows pond
life. Everyone knows who ponds are and what they can do.
So the crane wife may sound familiar to you because it's actually based on Japanese folklore. It's a story about a crane that tricks a man into thinking it is a woman so she can marry him. So she plucks out all of her feathers and continues to do so to continue to keep the man.
Interesting. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I only knew the Decemberists album.
Yeah, exactly. That may also be why it's familiar.
Maybe I knew it back when I was in college listening to that album. I've forgotten a lot of things since college.
Mm-hmm. So the story is about her and her engagement to this man who is very unromantic and very emotionally unavailable. And so she gives some examples kind of their relationship and points in which he, you know, kind of let her down or left her feeling kind of more lonely and sad than she was before. But I wanted to read this excerpt from it because I felt like this is an example of how precisely it kind of captures the experience of just generally being in a bad relationship, not necessarily gendered in any way.
Right.
So I just wanted to share this. I need you to know, I hated that I needed more than this from him. There is nothing more humiliating to me than my own desires. Nothing that makes me hate myself more than being burdensome and less than self-sufficient. I did not want to feel like the kind of nagging woman who might exist in a sitcom. These were small things, and I told myself it was stupid to feel disappointed by them. I had arrived in my 30s believing that to need things from others made you weak. I think this is true for lots of people, but I think it's especially true for women. When men desire things, they are passionate. When they feel they have not received something they need, they are deprived or even emasculated and given permission for all sorts of behaviors. But when a woman needs, she is needy. She is meant to contain within her own self everything necessary to be happy. That I wanted someone to articulate that they loved me, that they saw me, was a personal failing, and I tried to overcome it.
Jeez.
I thought that was so powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't talk about this a lot, but before Griffin and I were together, I was in a relationship from when I was like 19 all the way up to 28. And I would say that both of us had a lot of trouble with being emotionally available, and it just kind of bubbled over at a certain point. And we are still on good terms today, so it wasn't as if I, you know, totally burned all the bridges there, but I recognized that neither of us was getting what we needed from the relationship because both of us were just unable to communicate and unable to be vulnerable with each other. And I ended up feeling very uncomfortable, like saying what I needed in that relationship. And it really made me realize a lot of things about myself. And I think this is true for a lot of people. You know, the first time you're in a relationship, you don't really know what is just being in a relationship.
Yeah, you don't have that context.
Yeah, and what compromises are appropriate,
yeah.
You know, and what is actually like not appropriate, you know, and shouldn't be done to be in a relationship.
Sure.
Griffin and I have talked about this a lot because I think we were really surprised when we got together how little we felt like we had to sacrifice to be together.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were both like, oh, you mean I get to be me all the time and I can be happy
yeah.
together with this person who is also being themselves?
It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like so cliche to like write off all of your like past relationships as being like silly or something because you've aged. Like I'm thinking of like high school. I know you didn't like date a lot in high school or anything like that, but I look back at like relationships from then, most of them anyway, and you know, my relationships from college and thinking like how you know, ultimately compared to our marriage, it was something that was more like immature in a way, but yeah. really it's just because like now I have the context from this relationship to look back and realize like, oh, I didn't know that that's how it could be. I didn't know that that's, and not to say that like it's a neutral thing. Like I didn't know that that's what I should have been doing. Like it's not like the other person was feeling like I feel like a jag for not, you know, being better about being in a relationship because now I know. But like, I think you have to let yourself off the hook and just say like, that context is so valuable.
Yeah, no, it's completely true. And I think that's why a lot of people feel like you have to date a lot of individuals before you, you know, commit to anyone because you have to figure out what you want.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said for that because you just don't know how to be with another person until you've done it for a while.
Yeah.
I like this piece a lot. Again, it's called The Crane Wife, and it was in Paris Review. It's pretty easy to find. I liked it, too, because, you know, she's critical of her partner, but she also kind of presents it very factually of just like, this is the person he was, and it was completely the wrong person for me. And I realized it slowly over time. And so it doesn't feel like you're reading about this like evil, villainous person. It's just somebody who just was categorically not the right person for her.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good piece. I'd recommend it.
Yeah. Hey, before we move on, I do need to admit something to you.
Yes. Oh no, Griffin's been a crane this whole time. Is that what a crane sounds like? There you go. That sounds right.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Do you read about this in your zoo books?
Whoop, whoop.
Hey, Crane.
Whoop.
Can I steal you away?
Got a message here for Jessica, aka Spooky, and it's from Kevin. Jessica. You're a wonderful person. Here's a list of my small wonders about you. Your artistic ability, your eye for fabric and color, your fashion sense, your empathy and kindness. Also, you have really cool hair. My wonderful thing is our love. I love you a bunch and wanted to commemorate it through our favorite podcast. Love you forever, Kevin. It's self-love is also so important. I think that that is really special.
Has anyone ever told you you have cool hair?
Me?
Yeah.
No, we've talked about this.
Me neither.
I have the most base ass hair ever.
I think that's maybe one of the best compliments I've ever heard.
Rachel gets pretty upset if you don't tell her how soft her hair is when you're touching it.
There's sometimes.
Go ahead and explain.
I think I have really soft hair.
You do. Oh my God, you do. Please.
And there's been many points in my life where I've just kind of, you know, touched my own hair and thought, how has nobody ever told me how soft my hair is?
Yeah.
So I casually mentioned it to Griffin.
Casually.
And by casually, I mean that I recommended he compliment me on my soft hair. And
once?
Now,
the one time?
Now it's
is
pretty
it
frequent.
Once?
I'd say it's almost daily.
The demands.
Yes.
The demands. Requests.
This is what I need, Griffin.
Yes. And I give it to you.
You do. Do you want to hear this next message?
Yes, I do.
It is for Amy, and it is from past Amy.
What a coincidence.
Dear Amy, right now you're probably working super hard, getting used to living on your own, and having an amazing time in Portland. It's hard to tell yourself this, so I'll do it for you. I'm so proud of you for getting into art school and taking this huge leap out of your comfort zone. You're doing great, and I can't wait to be where you are.
Oh, shit. Is this, then this is the moment of singularity. This is the time where Amy leaps into Amy in the future.
Oh, see, I was thinking this is where Marty McFly sees himself performing at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance.
Oh my God, then there's another Amy, a future past Amy.
Past Amy, don't do anything to
do not
mess with future Amy and vice versa.
This message alone is probably a huge violation of the time scanner rules.
That said, thank you for buying,
thank you for the
Jumbotron. Buying this message.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about butts.
No, we don't.
Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, A Sister's Guide to Teens Through the Ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No. Will you change your mind?
I want to tell you about my second thing. I am about to, have you ever watched 12 Angry Men?
Yes.
Do you know the scene where the guy's talking about like the knife and he's like, this is a tortoise shell knife with this pattern, with this inch blade. What are the odds that somebody else would just like have one of those knives? And then one of the other guys stands up and pulls one out of his pocket and stabs it into the table. And it's like, what's up? I have one.
I didn't remember that until you just described it in detail.
But you remember that now that I've described it in detail. Okay, yes. I'm about to do that to you. Are you ready?
Okay. Is that why your eyes got real big?
Yeah. Explain to everybody what you're holding.
Earlier when Griffin was referencing the type of items one might keep in their pocket, and he said things like, gosh, I don't even remember now. I'm so flustered.
I know. Wallet, keys, whatever.
Wallet, keys. Yeah. And I made the joke that it would be a Tamagotchi. And he just reached in his pocket and handed me a Tamagotchi.
Hell yeah, I did. That's a Tamagotchi on. That's the new shit. Just came out last month.
Oh.
Yeah. This is the new, this is all new stuff.
Okay. Okay. All right.
It takes two AAA batteries, which I haven't put in there yet. So I haven't brought my child to life. Maybe I'll do it later on in the show and we'll do like a live hatching.
See, I...
That would be exciting for people, don't you think?
I never had one of these.
Oh, shit. You got the back off. Nice.
Could you not figure that out before?
No, I loosened the screw while I was in the closet earlier. I didn't want you to see that I had it. I wanted this amazing reveal moment.
So I never had one of these.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember a friend did. And this one is pretty large. It's larger than I remember them being.
Well, it's like full color. It's like a full color LCD screen.
Ooh, full color.
It's pretty technologically advanced. I am talking about Tamagotchi because...
Did you say Tamagotchi?
It's T-A-M-A-G-O-T-C-H-I.
You said Tamagotchi.
Well, it's Tamagotchi is right. It's I guess I was putting a little bit of Appalachian stink on it because it is a portmanteau of the word tamago, which is Japanese for egg.
Did you have one of these?
Yes, I did. I had an earlier generation one, which is the one that got school kids in trouble because like if you didn't interact with it for like 10 hours, then it would just fucking die. Like that was the time limit that you were on, which is fair. Like if we didn't interact with like our infant child for 10 hours, he probably wouldn't be in a very good place. Oof. I want to talk about Tamagotchi because I got one for Christmas when I was younger and that little dude was just my whole life. I loved that sweet little egg boy.
What did they look like? Like the little digital screen would show what exactly? I don't remember.
Well, it would depend on what stage of life they were at, right? Like most, pretty much all the versions of Tamagotchi, you would hatch the egg inside of the egg. And there was all this lore about like how the physical egg you were holding was like the containment unit for it so it could survive. And then when it was like an infant, then it was just like a little blob. But then like as it grew up to be like a child, it would grow ears. And then like as it was a teen and then an adult and later ones, you could grow it into a senior. You know, it would just get bigger and get like more stuff.
But
and,
like,
and until it died.
What did it look like, though?
Like bunny ears, sometimes it would grow.
It like grow like legs and arms like a human being or no?
I think so. Yeah, I think it can get there. It's been a long time since I've seen any of the old crew.
Can I give this back to you?
Yeah, please. Tamagotchi. Obviously, lots of competitors came after Tamagotchi because it was hugely successful. Then you had your like Giga Pets, which I had one.
Did
of.
You think about this because I was talking about little computer people?
It probably was. That probably was what got me there. So it was invented. Tamagotchi was invented by a woman named Aki Maita, who was an office worker working at Bandai, which is a toy company and an entertainment company that has merged to become Bandai Namco. And she was 30 years old. She had this idea of just like a pet that you could take anywhere, that like anyone could take care of, a kid could take care of, and it would not have like the downsides of owning a pet, which is to say like poop everywhere. And so she teamed up with a toy designer named Akihiro Yokoi, and they put together this concept, and they made hundreds of prototypes, and they would just pass them out to like schoolgirls in Shibuya and just say like, what do you think? What do you think of this little egg? And did all their QA testing there. Well, not QA testing, but like R&D stuff there. And then they released it in November 1996. And by the end of the year, it was being sold in over 30 countries and was like wildly, profoundly the biggest thing
ever. Isn't it kind of fascinating that somebody came up with the idea of this little device that had a screen on it that you carried around with you all the time? Like, before there were smartphones. Like somebody just had that idea of like, you know what? I don't think this is going to be too much to ask. I think people will be willing to look at a screen on and off all day.
Yeah, they were certainly right about that one. So since then, since November 1996, which is when the first one dropped, over 44 different versions of Tamagotchi have been released. And they've gotten more sophisticated as time went on. As of 2017, 82 million Tamagotchi units have been sold worldwide. And then this past summer, the new shit dropped, Tamagotchi On. I actually saw some people tweeting pictures of their Tamagotchi On, and it reminded me like, hey, I could do a wonderful segment about this and buy it, and I can expense it. I'm going to expense this purchase. And so the gameplay, it like changed and got more sophisticated. They became less quick to die. Starting like generation 3, you could let them go a little bit longer and the penalties wouldn't be quite as severe. They would include newer like age ranges that they could age up through. You could play games with them and like get points that you could use to unlock stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, was like at its core, was it just like feeding a thing and like cleaning it or something? Like, what did you do with these things?
I mean, yeah, you fed it and you cleaned it. You hear him? He's coming to life. I don't know how to turn the sound off. Oh, well, we'll figure it out as we go. Anyway, yeah, you would feed it. You could play games with it. You would have to, you would have to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not punish, but if it like acted
discipline?
Up. Discipline? Discipline. Yeah, discipline
really?
Is a much.
What would you do?
I don't remember. I think you would just, it's probably in this version, so I'll tell you once I get it up and running. Yeah, put them in timeout. I don't think you did, you know, used corporal punishment or anything horrible like that. But yeah, you had to do a few things that had all these different meters. So there was like a happy meter and a health meter and a discipline meter. And, you know, you had to keep them balanced. And if you did, they would get older and, you know, do more stuff. And then you could play games with them and, you know, add stuff to their environment. Or later versions had like full blown like kind of games going on in them where you could develop skills with them, which they would use to get careers. And then, which seems a little bit like my escapist fantasy of having a little egg child. Now I have to worry about their job also. Is
I'm
too
so
stressful.
Confused because the screen on these things is the size of a quarter. Like,
right.
How do they indicate that your little Tamagotchi has a job?
Yeah, that's a good question. There was also an iOS game that came out that I think probably had a little bit more screen real estate to work with. They included wireless functionality after a while, so your Tamagotchi could go hang out with somebody else's. And then they also added marriage and mating, where you could like mix two Tamagotchis together to have like a little baby. That's pretty cool. Yeah, they just got bigger and bigger. And I don't know, I just like that it's just this benign little distraction. I like benign distractions. For kids, it's something where, you know, it became so important to me and my cohorts who had one. And as adults, it's just like, I don't know.
Did you ever know anybody that had more than one?
Yeah.
Like was juggling like several?
Well, no, you wouldn't juggle with them because if you drop them, then that's it. They know if you drop them. They get really, really angry and they tell you to do bad stuff if you drop them.
You can go to jail.
You can go to Tamagotchi jail. What's your second thing? I'm going to be playing with my Tamagotchi the whole time.
I know. I figured as much. My second thing.
I'm setting him down.
No, you can play with it if you want.
No, baby.
I think that'd be like a little fun spice to my segment.
Well, you're going to say like my second thing is a really serious and dramatic thing.
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
It's vacation rentals.
Yeah, okay.
We just got back from a weekend, kind of a staycation, because we were literally only like 15 minutes away from our house now. We rented a big old house with a pool and had a bunch of our friends get together, and it was super awesome. And it's something we've been doing for years now.
Yeah, it's Rachel and my birthdays are like 3 weeks away, so we usually try to split the uprights and like do it then. But all of our friends are old and have kids, and so that's harder to do.
Yeah. So we started doing this when Griffin and I had just been dating. I think it was maybe for my 30th birthday was when we started. And you know, now I'm 37, so we've been doing this on and off for a long time.
Yeah, sure.
We used to go a little bit further out from Austin, and we'd find like an actual lake house. But it was usually
a shithole, which is the most fun kind.
Yeah, we started on a real shoestring. We would ask our friends to kind of split the cost with us, and so we'd try and keep the price real low. And so we would end up with these weird houses that had been kind of added on to and like thrown bunk beds on top of bunk beds in like bedrooms that maybe used to not be bedrooms.
So these like Winchester mystery house ass houses.
And that's part of what I love about vacation rentals. Like it really reminds me of like playing in a dollhouse as a kid, of like you go into this space that is for all purposes yours for, you know, 48 hours or however long you're there. And you get to kind of live this other existence.
Yeah.
And most often like with a bunch of people around you, you know, having this kind of new experience together. And it's so much better than just like, you know, a hotel or something where you don't feel that kind of personal experience with the space. You know, it's like designed to not be personal.
It's like going to an open house and then sleeping there.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole like vacation rental concept really like began in the 50s with this idea of like timeshares.
What? Oh, okay.
You know, of like people having like beach houses, you know, that they would like share with other people throughout the year.
Right.
But the Vacation Rental Managers Association was founded in 1985. And vacation rentals by owner, or Vrbo, as it is sometimes called, started in 1995.
Never knew that that's what that stood for.
And it initially just listed one property in Breckenridge, Colorado. Which I kind of love.
Yeah, I love Breckenridge, though. It's a nice place.
2005 is when we got VRBO and HomeAway joined together. And then in 2007, 2008 is when we got Airbnb.
Okay.
So the story of Airbnb is like much more scrappy. So I thought I would share it. These friends that had grown up together named Brian Chesky and Joe Gebbia moved to San Francisco in 2007 and could not afford their apartment. So they came up with the idea of putting an air mattress in their living room and turning it into a bed and breakfast. So in 2008, they had another roommate join them, or a former roommate, not like they had three people living in this apartment.
Yeah.
But this person brought a chief technology officer experience, and they founded their new venture, which they called Air Bed and Breakfast.
Is that what it is? Because they put a fucking air mattress in their living room?
Yeah, exactly. And you can still do that. Like you can rent a room in somebody's house.
Yeah.
Like when you're going through the listings and trying to specify what you want, there is an option of just like choosing a bedroom in somebody's house.
Sure.
In 2015, Expedia bought HomeAway, which was also with VRBO, to join together to try and compete with Airbnb, because Airbnb is kind of like, you know, it's kind of the big thing
right
now. As of 2015, the vacation rental industry is worth an estimated $85 billion. HomeAway alone has more than 2.8 million rooms, which is more rooms than the four largest hotel chains in the world.
Wow. Way to brag, HomeAway.
I think this is great, especially because a lot of times you'll be visiting a person and they live in a location where there aren't a lot of hotels to choose from.
Right.
And you want to be close by. And so you'll just go on one of these sites and kind of, you know, look at a zip code or look at a particular community and see what your options are. And you get the kind of convenience of, you know, potentially having a kitchen or, you know, like having a nice like living room, dining room set up so that you can like buy your own food and make your own meals and really kind of feel like a local when you're visiting a place.
Yeah, that luxury is obviously like just that, a luxury, and it is nice. For me, it is always just like, boy, I'm going to get some stories out of this house. Like, yeah. I feel like I remember we stayed at like a really wild apartment in Hong Kong when we went there a few years ago. And I feel like I remember so many things about that apartment. Like,
me
I had
too.
This huge living room lined with all these books, and then the bedroom was like the size of a shoebox, and it was just floor to like wall to wall to wall, just bed.
And the windows looked out on
a
tennis court where people were doing Tai Chi in the morning.
Like, I remember that. I remember everything about the weird Winchester Mystery House that we used to stay at that had like 2,000 VHS tapes that we would like watch. I watched so
like
many.
Like 7 huge projection TVs.
Yeah, like old CRT, like 4 foot deep projection TVs.
And like 8 copies of Jaws.
And that's where I watched a lot of, that's where I got turned on to like classic horror movies. Like that's where I watched Terminator and Predator and The Thing for the first time. It's just because they all, like, I remember that shit. That's the stuff I remember.
And the place we stayed in New Orleans that had all the nudes.
It had a lot of wild nudes.
Every room had several nudes on the
and not the tasteful.
Nudes. I remember some of them being
some
tasteful.
Of them were tasteful.
I think it, like, if you can swing it, I think it's a great option.
Yeah.
And I love that it exists. I love that, like, anytime we're traveling somewhere, I can be like, oh, you know what? I wonder if I could find a place to stay that, you know, had like access to some really cool things.
Especially
if
you're traveling with a big group of buddies, it's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. The place that we stayed had a whole bunch of bedrooms.
Yeah.
So it was nice. Like, you get to have a big old sleepover with your friends.
I love it. I also love the song Money Won't Pay from Bowen and Augustus. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Rachel's going to tell you about Maximum Fun while I bring my Tamagotchi to life.
MaximumFun.org is the website that hosts our lovely podcast. It hosts our podcast and other podcasts that are focused on culture and on comedy. And you can listen to some narrative podcasts like Mission to Zix and Bubble, or you can listen to some interview podcasts like Bullseye.
Keep going.
I
have to set the time and date.
I would recommend, if you are not familiar with the other shows on the network, to go to MaximumFun.org and check them out. They are all winners.
Fuck. Baby, I can't figure it out.
For those of you that ordered pins back when the Max Fun Drive had their pin sale, you should be receiving those shortly. And for those of you that are interested in checking out other McElroy programming.
Oh, yeah. Tell them about the merch.
You can go to McElroy.family. There's all sorts of cool merch on there. Backpacks, fanny packs, shirts, mugs, pins.
So long. Did it. I put in my name. Here we go. Miracle of life. Oh, okay. Here he is. Wake up. He's not even doing anything. He's still just an egg. Baby, make him wake up.
Oh, so it's a little egg rolling around in what appears to be a very nice living room.
Crack him, smash him open.
I'm pushing some buttons. Oh, that shows the time. Oh, you can look at it in military time too. That's fun.
Smash him open. I want to play with him.
I don't know which. There's 3 buttons on here. Which do you push to smash? He's just rolling around.
Well, this was a big fucking waste of time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.